The Innerbell Neighborhood Stories Project collects stories from residents who lived in the neighborhoods that were removed by the construction of the Innerbell Freeway in Akron. This project is part of the City of Akron's efforts to transform the decommissioned section of the Innerbell Freeway and to document a part of Akron's history that has been largely missing to date. This episode is part one of a three-part conversation on grief as it pertains to the stories heard in this oral history project. I'm Roger Riddle, the producer of the Innerbell Neighborhood Stories series. The interviews I've conducted as part of this series have been emotional and challenging. They are stories full of memories that tie to grief, anger, disappointment, and lots of other emotions, good and bad. As we share these stories with you, we thought it would be important to take a moment to talk about the emotions we as Akronites may feel as we listen to each segment. I'm joined today by our executive producer, Liz Akbu, and Bishop Joey Johnson, a grief recovery specialist and senior pastor of House of the Lord Church here in Akron, Ohio. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Liz, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you were hoping to achieve by having Akron residents tell their stories about these neighborhoods that were lost to the construction of the freeway?
Sure. So I'm an architect and spatial justice activist. Spatial justice basically means that justice has a geography and that equitable access to resources, opportunities, and outcomes should be a basic human right. And I work all over the country trying to figure out ways to take spaces that have caused harm in the past or disproportionately and negatively impacted certain populations to try to find out a way that we can actually turn them into places of healing. And so I was invited by the city to come to Akron to help with the Innerbelt, knowing that it had come through and displaced a majority African-American neighborhood, had been decommissioned in 2018. The city was interested in figuring out what the future should be, and in particular, having a community-led process around that. And as we started to investigate what the history of this place was, because I believe if you don't understand where you've been, you can't understand where you need to go. We actually found that there wasn't a lot of great information that had been kept. It was really hard to find stories, at least as part of official records. And so a process I've done on some other projects is to actually do oral histories, because I feel that that's really important to get a sense of a place. And so we started reaching out to former residents and business owners who had lived here before there was a freeway to understand what the neighborhood was like and what it meant when the freeway came through.
Great. Thank you so much. Bishop Johnson, you have shared your story and your memories of the neighborhood in a couple of our segments. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and specifically your grief recovery work?
Sure. I was born and raised in the city of Akron. I'm 70 years old. I've been pastoring here for, it'll be 49 years in March of 2023. This is the city I grew up in and went to school in and everything in, and was a part of the neighborhood that was displaced by the Innerbelt. And at that particular time, I was living with my parents, or I had moved out, but my parents were still alive. And as an adult, I watched them be cut off and their house left in that area, and the property values just plummet. The neighborhood dispersed, relationships torn up, all kinds of stuff. So when I was asked to be a part of this, I was glad to be a part of it to try to tell some of the stories. As a grief recovery specialist, I was certified in 2002, and I've been helping many people go through grief recovery personally, the grief recovery method, help them get certified, help churches, businesses, all kinds of entities begin to understand what grief is about. I've been doing it so long, they call me the grandfather of grief recovery. And I asked them, could I just be the father? I don't want to think I want to be the grandfather. But grief recovery is a critical element, particularly for African-American people who have so many issues of loss. And loss is the short-term, very familiar definition of what most people think about grief. But we at the Grief Recovery Institute define grief as the conflicting feelings that come at the change of any normal pattern of behavior. So grief is much wider than simply loss, although loss is a specific component.
Thank you. Liz, very early on when we first started working on this project, one of the things that you and I talked about was how these stories have been held at a very personal level. It's not something that everyone in the city really even had an idea of how things played out. And so for the people that were affected by it, they were things that just kind of weren't talked about. And I'm curious as to, for both of you, your thoughts on what happens when stories of trauma get held internally and how that can lead to issues within a person, within a community, within a city.
You know, we know that trauma actually has, it's not just an emotional experience, it's also a physical experience. It literally has impacts on your body. So you could almost imagine holding on to trauma, not actually going through the process where you move through, get to grieve and reckon and go through healing. It almost is like a cancer, right? Like it could metastasize and just take over your entire body in ways you might not actually understand. There's a great poem that it's a like one liner that just says that anger is grief that has been silent for too long. So I think sometimes when we see kind of unprocessed grief, we see a lot of anger, and it may be anger that you don't understand where it's coming from, but it's actually the grief. So I think that actually remaining silent, not having space for you to share your story, for you to move through the grief, has actually created a situation where a lot of people have been burdened with trauma that has played out in other ways of their life, both physically and emotionally, and even socially, in the way that they may relate to one another. And so, you know, I think one of the things I remember hearing very early on when we started talking to people about this, this was the first time that many people have been talking about these stories in 30, 40 years. And so imagine what it means to keep something that was so profound to the experience of you and your family. And imagine not being able to talk about it, to feel like it was your burden to hold that secret, your burden to hold that story. There's a cascading list of effects that happen from feeling like your story is not seen and not held.
Yeah, Liz is doing such a great job talking about that. You know, when an easy way to think about it is, I used to say, when you push this stuff down inside, then it comes out sideways. So it can come out in anger, it can come out in frustration, it can come out in depression. But a big one that she touched on is post-traumatic stress. It comes out in post-traumatic stress disorder. And people are trapped in this kind of world where they are, their autonomic nervous systems are chronically tuned to stress. They feel danger, they feel they're hyper alert, and may not, as she said, may not even be aware. I mean, they're not aware that this is going on because they really haven't given a lot of talk to it. They haven't talked about the studies or about the situation, haven't talked about the stories. But even beyond that, you have, as you kind of alluded to, Brother Roger, that you got a city or you have people attempting to respond to something from a systemic structural perspective that is not giving people the reality of the stories, the humanity that is wrapped up in all of this. It's like, okay, so let's replace the buildings. And well, wait a minute. I mean, yeah, that's good. But there is something psychoneurologically impacting, physically, neurologically impacting people and has damaged them. And we need to deal with that.
Oh, I just wanted to add a couple of things to what Bishop said, because I think one is the structural system that caused the harm in the first place is still continuing in some ways, right? And so I think in some ways it's not even post-traumatic stress, right? Like there are ongoing stressors that continue. And then I think that last point that you made, Bishop, about it's good to build new, but it's building on top of this stress that already exists is that I find in a lot of projects where I'm going into communities that have been harmed in the past or ignored or marginalized in the past, if you can't even acknowledge what happened in the past and heal that wound, how are they going to trust you to hold their story for a vision of the future? So it is both the combination of the past is unresolved, but there is a broken trust and a lot of wounding and pain that people are then trying to build new on, as if building new will fix it, right? But you know, you've already shown how you've been before. And so I think for a lot of people, they want to see some form of healing happen, some form of acknowledgement happening, so that they know that they can trust that this is finally going to be something that is different.
Bishop Johnson, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I think that when you, I'll just piggyback on Liz, when you are attempting to bring about some solutions and people are traumatized, their system, their autonomic nervous systems are chronically tuned to stress, this shuts down social engagement. And so one of the things that we are looking at is we're offering solutions that people can't hear, can't see, can't learn, because I'm in a traumatized state. I'm not open for that. And it's not a matter of a choice. It's not a conscious choice. It is an autonomic response that has taken place, for a fight or flight that I am caught in, because I've been equipped with this equipment to sense my own personal TSA agent looking for safety and danger. So once people begin to understand that, I think we may be able to make some progress. But with grief, sometimes, and as a grief recovery specialist, we are attempting to help people with grief, but you got to deal with trauma before grief. We're trying to get them, let's deal with the loss. I can't even deal with the loss. I'm too traumatized to deal with it. So I think it's great points.
So I guess that brings me to, well, what does this all mean for this series of conversations that we have to share with everyone? We have interviewed a number of people who have now begun to share their experiences of what it was like living in this neighborhood, and then what happened when they experienced the loss of a neighborhood through no fault of their own. So what happens, or what can happen, when a person hear some of these stories for the first time, and then, good or bad, what sort of result can we kind of expect from what can come from listening to other people share their stories?
Stories open up wounds that you don't even know are there. And you begin to respond at a level of, wow, I didn't know I was wounded. Wow, I didn't recognize that I had lost that. Wow, I was unaware that that took place. That you are exposing people to a reality that for the first time, some people may be getting in touch with feelings that they have never entertained. They're there, they're having impact, but I've never acknowledged them. I've never consciously thought about this. I've never consciously tried to verbalize or articulate what it is that I'm experiencing. So this could be quite traumatic. And I think we probably have seen some of that. And because it's a predominantly African-American population, what happens is we have ways of handling our trauma that may not be healthy, but they can be very effective. So we've learned to shut it down or ignore it or get a drink or whatever it is that we do to try to handle what's going on.
I can only sort of speak from my personal experience of managing grief, and also just what I've seen in other communities that I've worked with. And I think it's right that these stories and hearing this could either, for the first time, awaken your own grief. Maybe that it has been buried if you have a direct experience with either what happened at Vanderbilt or just what it means to be Black or a person of color or a marginalized population in some way. Or it could be that this is the first time you are, you know, hearing this, and you don't necessarily have an identity that allowed you to experience any of the systemic harms, but you feel deeply compelled and raw almost from hearing this. And I always say that, like, I think it's important to give time for your grief. I think sometimes why we don't do well with grief is we try to rush through it. We want to make it be a process that is quick as possible so we can get back to living. But grieving and living are not two separate things. And I think rather than rushing through listening to these stories, or rather than rushing through dealing with any of the feelings that they may elicit within you, is to just take a moment to acknowledge what you're feeling and to sit with it. And, you know, a lot of my teachers always emphasize breath, that like our breath is what keeps us alive. It is what actually allows us to breathe through and hold some of the things that might be difficult. So just allow yourself to feel in your body, take some deep breaths, and try to understand why you're feeling what you're feeling. It, just even asking, why am I feeling this way? What is going on? Why is this making me so sad? Just to have a moment where you're looking at that full in the face, that is actually the first step of being able to hold and process your grief. It's really quite simple, even though in the moment it may feel hard. And I would also say, like, don't try to rush through all the stories. Listen to them, feel it. And then when you're ready, you can go back and listen to some more. I would also say, I think sometimes why grief feels so hard is it's a thing we feel we have to do on our own. And I think that it's really important to understand that you have community, you have people who love you, you have people who are willing to hold space with you if you are willing to give them the invitation to support you in this way. So I would also suggest that, you know, use this as an opportunity to have some conversations with others in a really loving and vulnerable way. And the final point I'll make is, I think sometimes we run from our grief because vulnerability is scary. Our society, to the point that Bishop made, it's like, to survive, we're told to be hard. And being in grief, being vulnerable, we equate with being soft. But I actually think when you can be open with your vulnerability, that is the most courageous act that you can possibly make. There's a quote, I think it's from Susan David, that says that courage is not the absence of fear, but fear walking. So if you were to meet your fear, meet your vulnerability, it actually offers a path, I think, to getting to that place that I imagine we all envision, where we actually understand what it might mean to feel healed, and not only to feel healed by ourselves, but to feel healed with the people that we're in community with.
We're talking about community, and we have a community destroyed, but that adds you to another community, a community of grievers, a community of people who are traumatized, a community of people who are attempting to move back. And community is actually the healing reality that we need. Coming back and telling stories and listening and treating those stories as sacred, and being in the space of people who honor our stories and who we are.
The Innerbelt Neighborhood Stories are produced by me, Roger Rowe. Our executive producers are Liz Ogbu of Studio O and the City of Akron. Our music is by Flaco Torres, with additional sounds by Become Stardust. Special thanks to Summer Hall, Fred Wheat, Dylan Garitano, Mike Meyer, the Ohio and Erie Canalway Coalition, and a very special thank you to the Reconnecting Our Community Advisory Committee.